Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk Distribution, made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Would you like to know more about KPP Financial's Balanced Income Program? It's income-focused with moderate volatility and value-oriented diversification. This is a fully diversified program designed to reduce risk from any one stock, bond, or sector. And as with all of KPP's programs, one or more of KPP Financial's principals invest their own money right alongside their clients, which we call parallel investing. Just click on the Investments tab to find out more on investtalk.com. End of commercial. And now today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Invest Talk. I appreciate you being with me today. And it is Wednesday, June 1st, first day of June. And we're here to help you become a better than average investor is what we're trying to achieve. And to get the optimal asset allocation of portfolio, it's more complicated than most investors think. You know, it sounds like it's simple. Asset allocation, an investment strategy that attempts to balance risk versus reward by adjusting the percentage of each asset in an investment portfolio according to the investor's risk tolerance, goals, investment time frame, all those things. And it does all it is asset allocation. What kind of assets and what percentage of my portfolio should I put to achieve the goals I set over a certain time frame? And asset allocation changes as you get older. So you're dividing up all those investments in the portfolio into, classes, various asset classes, stocks, bonds, real estate, commodities, CDs, money market, just cash. You don't want a portfolio that's overloaded with particular investment. I recommended large cap oil companies at the beginning of the year, but I didn't fill up my whole portfolio with those. You don't do that. Now, if you want to be a super, super aggressive person and that's what you want to do, well, you'll either make a ton of money or lose a ton of money. But that's not really the goal. The goal is to grow the portfolio, to grow the portfolio over time. Not to make a killing in 6 months, because when you think in those terms, you also get killed in 6 months. So you don't want to do that. Carefully balance the whole portfolio. That way you can endure, market fluctuations. They don't kill you. They don't destroy your all the gains that you made. You can survive and go on. And it is difficult. It's time-consuming. You got to divide your stocks into groups such as large cap, mid cap, small cap, international, emerging markets, fixed income, you got to divide everything up. How much am I going to have this? How should I rebalance? And then every so often you tweak it. Tweak it based on the reality of the economy, the stock market that you're in at the time. Okay? Tweak doesn't mean wholesale changes. Does not mean that. Now, also, you want to set it up based on your own personal risk tolerance. How much risk do you feel comfortable with? And as you get older, you need to take less and less risk. Now, there are exceptions to that. There are. Now, a conservative portfolio, might be 70-75% fixed income, 15-20% equities, 5-10-15% cash. Moderate, maybe 50-60% fixed income. When I say fixed income, I think in buying bonds themselves, not bond funds. 50-60 fixed income, 35-40% equities, 5-10% cash. And if you're aggressive, 80-100% in equities. That's aggressive. Maybe a little bit in fixed income, a little bit of cash at certain times, but you are aggressive if you're always in the market with most of your assets. These are just broad guidelines, and you can tweak them. You tweak them to according to your personal risk tolerance, as I said. So, do you have questions about asset allocation? Bring your questions or comments to me right now. Before we go any further, let's check in with our 24-hour listener line. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi. I had three questions in regards to mutual funds. When is a good time to buy and a good time to sell? And the last question, if you can recommend a book in your professional opinion, which one would you recommend regarding mutual funds? Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, it's difficult when you ask a question, when's a good time to buy and good time to sell? You know, the stock answer is, you know, buy low, sell high. But that really doesn't answer the question because the question is so broad. The good time, it depends on what kind of mutual fund it is. You know, and broadly speaking, you basically sell when you need the assets or when you want to protect your assets or when the mutual fund doesn't do what the mutual fund says. There's a number of reasons to sell a mutual fund. Notice none of those reasons I gave you are necessarily performance-based. It's not necessarily the way you do it. When to buy. The best time to buy any asset, a stock asset, ETF or mutual fund in the stock market or stock, is in the depths of a recession. That's the best time to buy. I mean, those are, but you know, that question is very broad, so it's very difficult to answer. And a good book to read on mutual funds, well, there's various good books to read on stock market, on the stock market or the economy, but not very many on basically on mutual funds. If you're going to start off, if you're a beginner, You go read the books by some of the pros that have been around a long, long, long time. Peter Lynch is one of them. Beating the Street, One Up on All, Wall Street. Those are two basic good books to start with. Okay? Beating the Street, One Up on Wall Street by Peter Lynch. Now, why don't we go ahead and take a text question. What are your thoughts in Zebra? Z-B-R-A is the stock symbol. Z-B-R-A. Z-B-R-A. Okay. And that's Zebra Tech Corporation. It's an industry leader that has debt that it's reducing after acquisition of Motorola Enterprises in 2014. It hit a rough patch recently and is hovering around its 52-week low. Do you think it's a good buying opportunity given that its products will blossom well once the IoT, Internet of Things, begin to take off the next 5 years? What's a good entry point in your opinion? Okay, Zebra is a $2.8 billion company, manufactures direct thermal and thermal transfer printers, RFID printer encoders, and dye sublimation card printers. Okay. It's a $53 stock. It's going to make $5.23 this year after making $5.31 last year. And that's a huge gain from a couple years ago, probably because of the purchase of Motorola. So you've got to take that in consideration. Next year, the earnings are supposed to go up $6 to $6.19. That means the stock is about 8-9 PE, fairly low. It has had great growth up until the most recent quarter where sales growth fell 5%. Before, sales growth was up in the previous quarter 21%. And before that, over 200% for three quarters in a row. But again, that might have been as a result of the acquisition. So it's hard. You got to separate that out. Find out what its core growth is. And the problem you have with this company that I would worry about is debt. It has a huge amount of debt. And as you pointed out, that's going to be a very large problem. Debt is an issue that any company has, lots and lots of debt. That's an issue that needs to be really scrutinized because it will retard earnings. And if interest rates start to go up and you have this huge debt hanging over your head and you need to refinance it, you can see how harmful that could be. Now, is the stock cheap? Yeah, it looks pretty cheap, but I would very closely look at that debt issue and why is sales growth shrinking? Why did that happen? That would be a concern of mine. And see if that's just a one quarter thing or is it going to rebound next quarter? What's going on there? And as far as what the company does, I'd have to do a lot more research to see exactly how good that industry and what that industry is doing. And I frankly don't have that knowledge. Now, can you name the five types of mutual funds? That is one of our talking points today. Also, how cheap debt is, low cost debt is keeping the economy from recovering. It's a very interesting premise. Low cost of debt is the problem of the economy growing so poorly. That's the premise of this article. And they point out why. So I'm going to share that with you. And in the, when the stock market goes, the Brexit, where Britain is voting this month on leaving the EU. It's coming up later this month. If that happens, which sectors of the stock market are going to get hurt the worst, and which ones will survive the best? And because we didn't get to it yesterday, I want to talk about the state of people's finances in the United States, if I can. I want to get to that too, if possible, today. Those are going to be the talking points. The market was a pretty much kind of a no-go today. Remember, we had a mixed market yesterday. I think the Dow was up about 86, the NASDAQ up 15, and the NASDAQ down 2. That was yesterday. Today, the Dow is up 2. The Dow was down 86 yesterday. The S&P was up 15, and the NASDAQ was up 15, and the S&P down 2. So today, the Dow recovered up 2 points. The NASDAQ added 2, which increased from yesterday, 4 points. And the S&P, instead of shrinking 2 points yesterday, got those 2 points back today, up 2. So there's really not a lot of things going on. Remember, everybody's going to be waiting to hear, next week we get, is it next week? I think it's next week. Could be the end of this. No, yeah, it's next week. A jobs report for May. But most people are sitting on pins and needles about the Federal Reserve and what they're going to do in their meeting later on this month. A lot of people think they're going to raise the rates. Raise the rates again. Here's an interesting fact from CNN Money. Women on average earn less than men, which reduces how much home they can afford. How big of a house? Hence that 10% gap in home values. That lower purchasing power has a lasting impact and limits single women's ability to build wealth, since their homes tend to appreciate slower. Now, if you'd like to maximize your real estate investment, get an expert opinion from our in-house realtor, Justin Klein. He has a team that can shed some light almost anywhere in the country. The team is everywhere. Send me a note. Click on Contact Justin or InvestTalk.com. 888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to John in San Francisco, and he wants to talk about Nike. How you doing, John?
I'm doing okay. Thank you so much. We love your show.
Thank you.
Could you please tell me about Nike? Is it good to hold or sell?
I think Nike, if you own it, it's one of those companies that over time will just be huge. It will just keep going up. Sales are still growing, but they're growing only about 5 to 10% versus, 10 to 20% years past. But it's so big, it's a $92 billion company. You can't expect it to keep growing that fast. So, the stock is coming down, and that's, I'm sure, John, is why you're talking about it, is because the stock has been coming down. It was at a high last year of 68, and today it's at 54. I'm hoping, and I don't want to make you upset, but I was hoping that we get a further pull down so I can buy it. I like Nike. I think Nike is one of the top-notch corporations in the world. Top-notch. They don't have much debt, hardly any at all. Return equity is 28%. They have very strong numbers. They're growing earnings and sales. Earnings are growing 14, 15%. So I'd probably hold on to it, John, and just ignore this. And yeah, if it falls some more and you need, maybe you should buy more, not necessarily sell it. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Thanks, John. Good luck with it. I like Nike. NKE is a simple one. They make tennis shoes. Everybody knows that. This is Invest Talk. You're an important part of the Invest Talk team, or part of our show, and we want your input. Your questions help keep us on track. How can you determine what you're really paying in fees in your employer's 401k plan? Can you give me a call and talk about it? 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. We're going to talk to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. I just wanted to tell you, this is my favorite show of all the ones on 1220.
Well, I appreciate that.
I try to listen as often as I can, but sometimes I miss the thing.
Well,
but anyway,
I thank you for the nice words. Thank you.
I just wanted to ask you about if we have this correction within the next, like, let's say 6 months,
mm-hmm.
Kind of sectors would you be looking at? Would it be something like utilities or oil or?
Well, in a correction, utilities usually survive a correction better than a lot of other companies. Because, you know, that's one of the reasons I said, Art, that I have been buying in recent months. If I buy anything, it would be non-cyclical kind of stocks, because I know that they will hold up better. They still will go down, Art, in any correction, but I think non-cyclicals will hold up better, meaning that, you know, drug companies, utilities, those kinds of companies that don't rely on a strong economy and they still sell their products. Those are the non-cyclicals. And anything that got really beaten up already, which is why I liked oil back in a few months ago, you know, and I like gold last year, was buying gold. In a correction, gold probably would hold up well as well. Gold stocks, gold mining stocks, those kinds of things. And I do think we'll have a correction. I mean, we've never not had a correction. It's just a degree. Art, there, I can't tell you how deep it will be. I don't think we're going to fall into a bear market. A bear market, everybody, is when the market goes down more than 20%. They usually happen in conjunction with a recession, and I don't see a recession this year. I don't.
Okay.
Okay, Art?
Thanks
for the call. Appreciate the call. Thank you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So, you know, we have our main talking point. I want to talk about that. Five types of mutual funds. When it says types, it's talking about pretty big categories like equity funds, which means stock, U.S. stocks, or it could be foreign stocks. Equity funds is a type. Fixed income funds, balanced funds, index funds, and then specialty funds. Very broad-based five types of funds. Now, each fund, of course, each kind of fund, equity funds, there's a zillion different kinds. Equity funds could be, you know, small cap, large cap, mid cap. It could be all caps. It could be an index fund. I mean, well, an index fund is its own category. But it can be any type of stocks that it concentrates on, okay, is an equity fund. Fixed income is all about buying bonds of some kind, government bonds, which are very, very, very safe, to junk bonds, long maturities, short maturities, fixed income funds. Balanced funds have both stocks and bonds. They're balancing between the two. Now, that balance could be mostly stocks or mostly bonds and anything in between. Index funds, of course, is tracking the S&P 500, the Dow, the Russell 2000, and on about all the different indexes. And specialty funds are, you know, they specialize in maybe a sector or a method of buying stocks or any other equity. A specialty fund can buy currencies. It could do anything. Commodities, strictly commodities. It could be so specific it could buy corn futures, and that's it. I mean, it depends. It's specialty. You got to read what it is. So be very, very careful of what kind of funds you're buying. And again, this goes back to the top of the show when we talked about proper asset allocation and rebalancing and all those things you need to do. And if you're going to do it with funds, these are the five basic categories. But there's 8,000 funds out there. So there's so many of them. And, you know, we're not even talking about my big concern about never, ever, ever buying a loaded fund, a fund that charges commission. You don't have to. There's just as many non-loaded funds or there are loaded funds. So don't do that. Okay, we have a text question. Hello, Steve. Justin, my wife turns 70 and a half next month and has to start taking redemptions in her IRA. Should I go directly to the mutual fund company to set up a redemption schedule? Would my broker charge me a sales fee for each redemption on the schedule if I went through him? Thank you for the help. Mike from Washington State. You probably should go through your accountant, not your brokerage firm. They're not the experts. You know, they only see what you have with them. You could have IRAs or old 401ks somewhere else. They don't know, so they don't know what the minimum distribution. We're talking about required minimum distributions when you reach age 75 from your retirement accounts. Talk to your accountant. Tell him what you have, and then come up with your percentage that you have. Now, as far as the redemption schedule, you really can't put yourself on a redemption schedule only a year at a time because the rate, the minimum required distribution rate, changes every year. So you don't know. You can't put a schedule on more than the year that you're in. And yeah, they're going to charge you fees for selling anything. They won't charge anything for just getting the money out, but they will charge you a fee for selling something. We're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. If you'd like to schedule a portfolio checkup with me, we have some new dates posted on InvestTalk.com. I will be meeting people via Skype and telephone on June 16th, but I also will be in San Ramon on the 28th and San Jose on the 29th. Go to InvestTalk.com.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. And remember, no matter where you live in the United States, you can have your retirement portfolio reviewed by a registered investment advisor at no cost. Steve does a few of these each month on Skype or telephone. To schedule your time with Steve, just click on the Invest Talk tab on investtalk.com and then portfolio review. Continue now with this Wednesday, June 1st, Invest Talk. This is a conference call about your money. Do you have a comment about investing or a question about your portfolio or a decision that you need to make? Ask Steve directly at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, guys. Love the show. Was looking at SCLD, Steel Dynamics. Really shot up shortly after the beginning of the year and moved up quite a bit. Wish I'd been a part of that, but definitely was not. And it's been, you know, kind of hit a peak, and it's not that it's regressed off of that peak, at least not very much, but it's kind of been trading in that range, short of that high. Wondering, looking forward, it looks like their earnings are projected to be pretty decent. Was kind of wondering if this was possibly a consolidation, possible buy point, a little worried that, you know, it's pretty close to a pretty good high there. So, want to know your thoughts on that. Again, Steel Dynamics, STLD. Thanks for the show. Have a great one.
Okay, Steel Dynamics is out of Fort Wayne, Indiana. Manufactures flat-rolled structural bar, rail steels, and recycled ferrous and non-ferrous scrap metals. And it's a very well-run company, a $6 billion company. Very well-run in that, you know, Steel Manufacturer of the Year awards, and so on and so forth. So it's a really good company. Not too much debt. There's debt, but not too much. And they're going to make $1.86 next year. It's a $24 stock. Now they made 73 cents a share last year. So, and $1.54 this year. So why did it run up? Why? Because there's no huge sales growth. Sales growth has been falling pretty strongly the last four quarters. So it's not sales, even though earnings went up. Probably because there's been recent tariffs slapped on Chinese steel imports coming in here, and that's going to make our steel manufacturers stronger because they can compete. China has way oversupply of steel, and they're trying to, you know, sell it everywhere they can, and of course they come here to sell it here. That was the problem before, but now that they're putting tariffs on it, maybe the dynamics has changed. Now, if I sit back and look at the steel industry, we still have overcapacity. We don't have a world economy that's grown strong enough to absorb that overcapacity. I think our industry here will do okay, but they've already had a pretty big run-up. I wouldn't buy it at this point. I'd wait for the next slowdown, the next either stock market correction or economic slowdown to pick these things up. I wouldn't pick it up here because I don't think this whole sector is that strong, you know, because of the world economic outlook. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, how cheap debt is keeping our economy from recovering? Normally, when you're in a recession, the first thing the Federal Reserve does when we start moving into recession and jobs are being lost is to lower interest rates, to reduce the cost of debt, to try to spark growth. And they did that, and so did the rest of the world. And that so far, they keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it, and it's not doing any further good. So usually cheap debt will bring consumption forward. In other words, the lower the cost of things, people then borrow money and buy stuff with that cheap debt. And that is supposed to kickstart the economy. Okay. But if you're bringing consumption forward, remember, long-term, that consumption, you've already consumed. So getting cheaper and cheaper debt has a less and less beneficial effect. What happens is it becomes less and less beneficial effect in the underlying basic economy, but it does, with all that cheap money, it then turns into a situation where financial instruments benefit, not the underlying economy, just the financial. By stock buybacks, borrowing cheap money to buy your stock back, or maybe acquisition. But supply of goods and services doesn't increase. All you're doing is having ownership changes in, you know, the underlying economy. Now for consumers, savings, you know, you have cheap debt, but interest rates are so low, so you have lower interest rates. Doesn't that reduce, think about the retirees, doesn't that reduce their income? So they can respond by cutting spending. So cheap debt doesn't help there. And they move their money to more risky investments. And for those who are looking for borrowing for a house, their savings build more slowly because they buy a bigger house. So they can't save as much. So that slows down consumption in the long run. So cheap debt is not all good news. And as I said, the best time, the most effect it does have is when you first enter recession and you have interest rates that are decently high, and then you can reduce them to spark the growth. But once you've sparked the growth, more and more cheap debt, and that's what's happening around the world for years, doesn't help, and you've seen it not help. It's not working. But yet, central bankers want to even go further in the negative territory of interest rates. But it's not working, but they still do it. They're still going to do it. That doesn't make any sense. Well, to them, it makes sense. And you're going to find economists to say, oh, it'll eventually work. But what's eventually? How many years have we had this cheap debt? Anyways, did you know that when you roll over your 401k, after-tax contributions can only be rolled into an IRA or a retirement plan that keeps track of the taxable, non-taxable parts? Maybe you better talk to your 401k rollover experts here at KPP Financial. You gotta be careful about after-tax contributions. I don't like at all putting after-tax contributions in a 401k or an IRA. You should ask me why. Why? Well, because you have to keep track of them forever until you retire. And then you got to justify it to the IRS when you start taking money out. You're taking out money, your after-tax contributions or before-tax contributions. You got to keep it separate. And you got to prove it to the IRS, when you start taking out in retirement 20 years from now, 10 years from now. It's very difficult. It just makes it complex. But if you want to talk about us, just click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin and type in 401k rollovers on investtalk.com.
Now, InvestTalk Real Estate. Chevy Atkinson, real estate agent and investor, speaks with Justin Klein about questions to ask your realtor.
Now, Chevy, according to data from the National Association of Realtors, most people who are looking to list their home only ask two questions from their real estate agent or prospective real estate agent, which is how much will I get for the property and what will my commissions be? And they miss out on so many other types of questions that are very important. So what questions should they really be asking before signing up with an agent?
That's a great question, Justin. We actually have a list of 10 questions that we recommend that people ask their agents before signing up. Just to kind of do a brief overview of the questions that I ask when I sell my own properties out of state. Number one is, what's the marketing plan that you're going to complete on the property? Another example of a good question is, how many homes have you sold in the last 12 months? The average real estate agent only does about 4 transactions. Another question is, what do you do to market beyond my neighborhood? Because a lot of people will have the guy in their neighborhood that holds open houses, drops flyers, and those things. But, in reality, in most areas, the buyer's coming from outside of the neighborhood. So, what do you do as far as a marketing plan? What's your international marketing approach? What's your national marketing approach? How many buyers are currently in your database? Another good question that I like to ask is, what do you do as far as to get the home ready to sell? Because there's can be a big difference between an agent that just comes in and doesn't stage a home versus an agent that does stage a home, and it can make a huge difference. What's the average price your homes sell for compared to the list price? A lot of agents in the marketplace, I find, will do what's called buy a listing, where they'll go in and they'll promise the seller the highest amount for their home, knowing that that's going to be what's going to win them the listing, and then they'll hammer and hammer and hammer the seller down and sell nowhere near the original listing price that they promised.
So you're saying they overpromise and underdeliver.
Exactly. It's actually a strategy. We call it buying a listing. Mm-hmm. And I've competed with agents that do it. I try to educate sellers on it. I'd rather undersell, right? Underpromise and overdeliver. And it's proven that if you list your house too high to begin with, it'll end up selling for actually less in the long run.
Because it sits on the market for too long.
Because it sits on the market. It can have a stigma to it. And it can create a problem for a seller. So I don't buy listings. I tell people, here's the range. I make suggestions on what they can do to get to the high end of the range. And I tell them if it's worth it or not. We analyze it. It depends neighborhood to neighborhood.
If you have a question, 888-99-CHART is the number to call, or contact KPP's own licensed realtor and financial advisor, Justin Klein. Click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Hey guys, it's Kyle calling from Raleigh. I had a question about a stock. I was wondering about APD. A as in apple, P as in pear, and D as in diamond. Just wanted to know what your opinion on it was. Thanks, love the show. Bye.
Okay, Air Products and Chemicals, APD, a $31 billion company, so it's a big cap, pretty big, very large company. Offers industrial and specialty gases, chemicals, equipment to the metals, chemical, energy, and other markets. Its sales are, they have a huge, they do sell a lot. The stock is a bit overpriced right now, but they're going to make $7.48 this year. That's up 14% from last year. And then $8.07 next year, another 8% increase. While at the same time, sales are falling 6 to 9% per quarter for the last 5 quarters. In the most recent quarter, it was down 6%. So they're having trouble with their sales, but earnings are looking pretty strong. But I don't like that scenario, even though it's a big blue chip company. I just think it's too expensive. I don't think it's insanely expensive, but I think it's too expensive, and I would not buy it. It's at $144 a share, going to make $8. So you're talking about, 18 PE or so? A good return on equity at 20%. That's very good. Strong cash flow at $11 a share. That's very good. Mutual funds have been slowly buying over the last year, so that's good. I mean, there's a lot of good things about it. But the stock has already run up from 115 to 145 in the last 6 months. I wait for a pullback. You hear me say that a lot, right? Because we're entering the time of the year that generally produces some kind of pullback, the summer or the early fall, some kind of pullback. And the question is, well, is it going to have a 10% run up and then a 10% pullback? So maybe I should buy it now, because what difference does it make? Well, I don't know. I don't see a 10% run up. I don't see any justification for it yet. So earnings and sales of corporations have been falling for almost a year. They got to turn around and grow. That means the rest of the world has to turn around and grow, and not us only, the only ones out there that are growing decently, even though our growth is not that stellar. It really isn't. It's just pretty mediocre. So Air Products and Chemicals is a very cyclical company. So if the economy doesn't grow, this company's not growing. So I would be careful, and I'd wait for a pullback. Great company, though. A very well-run company. But wait for it to be a little bit cheaper in price. The stock market sector that will get hit the hardest if Britain leaves the EU. This month, British citizens are voting on whether they want to leave the EU or not. And it's a coin toss whether they will. No one really knows. It's not, you know, there's been, it may or may not happen. So which sectors will going to get hit worst? Which ones will be the best if the UK leaves the EU, the European Union? Well, the biggest impact, the worst, is probably going to be on banks. That's probably where the worst impact is going to happen, because there's going to be a lot of turmoil in the banking industry in Europe because of this. And retailers, insurers, and other financial sectors and property-related stocks will be hit to a lesser extent. The ones that are really will probably benefit the most will be utilities, obviously. Why? Because they're not exposed to anything in Europe or Britain. Large international companies, non-cyclical companies, those will hold up the best. Now, there's a lot of fear that if Britain does exit the EU, that there's going to be a big market correction here in the United States. Everybody's talking about it, so when everybody talks about something might happen, that means everybody's already built in the price that it will happen. So I'm not necessarily buying that it's going to, you know, have a big effect. I'm sure it'll have an effect. I just don't know how big the effect will be. So those are the things you can do. Utilities, big international companies, non-cyclical companies, they'll do fine. Banks will probably be the ones that get hurt the worst. And of course, you know, depending on which banks, you know. But are they going to vote to leave the EU? And I think it's a coin toss. I think they very well may leave the EU. Because what have been the benefits of being in the EU, really, for the Britons? What has been your benefits? Yeah, you have some, of course. But really? How much? How well has the EU been doing ever since they they haven't been doing very well. You're listening to InvestTalk. That's our show, InvestTalk. That's what you're listening to. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. If you still have a question, well, we still have the time to answer it. 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and that's our anytime number. Okay, let's go to Ray in San Jose. He wants to talk about insurance. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for your show. I really appreciate it. I just wanted to ask you, what do you think about the umbrella policy insurance? Is it a good idea to get it?
I do like umbrella policies. He's talking about umbrella policies, everybody. And what those are, let's say you have a homeowner policy and you have a couple of car insurance policies, and you want, you know, $1 million coverage. Well, you can buy $1 million liability coverage for your house. Liability means if someone gets hurt, if someone gets hurt on your property, it's your fault, and they'll pay for you on behalf of you. And same thing with the car insurance. So for the liability portion, of your policy, an umbrella is a really good idea. Reason being is that you could buy, you know, $300,000 coverage on your underlying homeowners and auto policies, $300,000 liability coverage, and then buy $1 million on top of that with an umbrella that covers, let's like umbrella that covers those both those policies, and it'd be much cheaper, right? The umbrella policies are very inexpensive. But if you buy $1 million coverage from ground up for the from the homeowner's policy or auto policy, that's going to be more expensive than if you bought $300,000 and then bought an umbrella on top of that. It's cheaper. So why would you not do it? You check out the prices yourself. And, you know, one thing you do is you got to kind of have insurance for the same company both on both homeowners and auto. Okay, and you might have a small business policy. Keep that with the same coverage too. And as you build wealth, you might want higher and higher insurance rates. The umbrella is much cheaper. If you get a $5 million umbrella, much cheaper to do it with an umbrella than buy underlying coverage all the way up to $5 million. So yeah, I like the idea of an umbrella, Ray, a lot. As a matter of fact, I have an umbrella on my policy. So that's how much I like
it. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
That was really helpful.
Thanks, Ray. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Roger in Oakland. How you doing, Roger?
Good, Steve. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you.
I had two questions. So my first question is, I have, I'm invested in a small cap mutual fund through Vanguard.
Uh-huh.
I think it's NAESA.
Uh-huh.
And I know it's a little high right now, and probably thinking that there might be a pullback. It would now be a good time to sell?
I would say yes.
And my,
yes.
Okay.
Okay. Next question.
Great. And then my next question is, how do you feel about Disney stock right now for like a long-term investment?
I like Disney's business plan long-term. They have a solid company, a solid business plan. They have main ways to make money. There are theme parks, there are movies, and their television. Now, the television is the area that they're having to struggle with, and specifically ESPN. Specifically, that's where they're least profitable piece of the business. But, you know, they're doing so well and on all the others. I kind of like Disney as something that I think it's going to be worth a lot more money in the future. They're still growing their sales. They're a $160 billion company. They're not small. They're huge. They're growing their sales. In the December quarter, they grew sales 14%. The most recent quarter only 4%. But try to grow a $159 billion company doing $13 billion a quarter. Try to grow that fast. It's impossible. You know? But fundamentally, very good return on equity. Earnings always have gone up for year after year after year. The P is 18. So it's not like, wow, that's out of line. It's just a little high. So, Roger, I like Disney a lot. I'd be a buyer of Disney. Okay?
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. So I would sell my small cap and move into big cap. And you know, another reason why I like Disney, it's kind of a non-cyclical type stock. It really is. Our time is up. I wanted to tell you about a useful info sheet that could help you. 10 questions to ask when picking an agent, a real estate agent. It could save you time, save you money, maybe thousands of dollars. You have instant access to this useful document when you sign up for free to be an InvestTalk Insider on InvestTalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab. I'm Steve Peasley, President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, I want to thank you for listening today. It's great to have you. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.